friends. It's me, your old pal Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with...
me, Alice Slater.
For our second episode of the new and, what we like to think, improved... what page are you on? How are you doing, Alice?
I'm doing good, thank you, pal. I'm flying high. How are you?
I am great. Would you like to tell our friends at home why you are flying high?
Okay, so I'm flying high because today I finished the first draft of my novel. There's still like a huge amount of work to do and a huge amount of words to write. But you know, I've written from beginning to end.
This is what a first draft be like sometimes.
Exactly. Oh yeah, so I'm buzzing.
I'm very happy for you, my dude.
And how are you? What have you been doing today?
Just a bit of work, and then I've taken up crochet.
Look at you with the hobbies.
Yes. So I've
She's
taken
a lockdown
up,
crafter.
I am a lockdown crafter, but yeah, crochet is something that I plan to just sort of do, whether or not I'm good at it. And then hopefully in time I will get good at it.
Are you aiming to learn how to make like the little, I can't remember what it's called, the little Annie Maggie?
Oh, amigurumi.
Yeah.
So that basically I think that is very cute. I would like to make little things. And I asked on Twitter if that is very difficult. And everyone was like, if you cannot already crochet, you won't be able to do it. And I was like, I cannot already crochet.
Fair.
So yeah, I literally, just before we finished recording this episode, I finished my first granny square, which you can see on, well, you can't see on my Insta story anymore because this episode will go out after my Insta story has expired. But anyway... yeah, so that's what I've been up to. I've been crocheting. I'm delighted to be here with you, my friend.
Me too. It's only been a week. We're not used to this.
I know, but people seem to be up for this new weekly schedule, so long may we stick to it.
Have you had a good reading week?
Yes, I've had a better reading week than I normally do, and maybe it's because I've been invigorated by the old pod. Maybe knowing that the pod is back and I want to have some material to discuss with you.
Me too.
So, yeah. What have you been reading? I know we can't go too deep on what you've been reading because we would like to go deeper in a future episode, but tell me about your week.
Okay, so basically, I've read 4 books, which is a lot for me. I think that's a lot for most ordinary people.
Yes.
yes. And I'm like a third of the way through book number 5. All of these I read with my eyeballs, and 2 of them I read in one day. So I read How to Stay Sane in an Age of Division by Elif Shafak.
That's one of the mini books, isn't it?
Yeah, it's super mini. So I love, in bookshops, you know, when you get to the front of the till and there's like the display of the little super short like novellas and single edition short stories and little essays and things. I love them and I miss them. So you can't always tell when you see people talk about a book online what it is, like if it's a quick read or if it's a big chunky tome or whatever. But this, it turns out, is a very quick read. And it's just like a little essay about how to get through the pandemic and like the current times that we're in. I really enjoyed it. But there isn't really much for me to say about that.
Yeah.
I then also read another one, which I'm not going to say much about, called All Men Want to Know.
Oh, yes.
Which
I've
is
heard
by,
of this. Yes, yes, yes.
It's by a French Algerian author whose name is... and I'm not very good at doing French accents, but I'm sure you'll be able to correct me. Nina Baroy?
Yeah.
Baroy?
I mean, that's probably...
that sounded so Brummy.
Probably an Algerian name, so I would not be able to correct that anyway.
And it was fine. It's translated fic. And then I read a book called The Truants, which is one that I'm not going to go into at all, because I want you to read it and we'll talk about it properly.
Yeah, I'm going to get it and I'm going to read it and then we're going to discuss it.
I just have so much to say, but I need a receptive audience. You know, I need to bounce with you. I want to hear what you think.
Yeah.
It
sounds right up our street. It sounds like a book that y'all, me and you, should be enjoying.
Yeah, I think it's typical pod fodder. It was a Waterstones book of the month. It's already out in paperback and somehow I'd completely missed it. But it's by Kate Weinberg, if you're curious to pick it up in the meantime. But yeah, we'll go into that later.
Yeah, you know, maybe this is a good little advertisement for you to pick up The Truants by Kate Weinberg, because I haven't picked it up yet. So if you listening at home want to read it in time for us to talk about it, then do that because you have time, because I haven't read it yet.
And then also maybe when we discuss it, we could have do a little bit at the end with spoilers.
Yeah.
Go all in. Just go all in. Why not?
Tell me about your fourth book.
Okay. And then my final book, which is the one that I'm actually going to pitch, is the Sarah Crossan, Here is the Beehive.
Yes. So I am not like wild about verse, like novels in verse. In fact, I would go as far as to say I have actively chosen to never read one. But this one sounds so juicy that I might actually read it.
Oh, so you've never read a novel in verse?
I'm pretty sure I haven't, yeah.
Interesting. I don't know if I necessarily, like, seek them out. So I read, the only other one that I've read that's, like, true verse is Sarah Crossan's YA book, One.
Yes.
Is it called One or Once? One. Which is about conjoined twins, which I think, did we just, I feel like I remember us doing that on the pod, but we obviously didn't, if you haven't read it.
No, I don't have any memory of that.
And, you know, it's good. I really enjoyed it. I read that in like an hour. And same with this one. I read it in like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Here is the Beehive is about a woman who was having an affair. And at the very beginning of the book, you discover that the person she was having an affair with has died in an accident. And the kind of narrative is told in verse as she reconciles her grief with both her husband, who she is still with, and also the wife of the man that she was having an affair with. And yeah, it has like the kind of vibe of a thriller. It's very pacey and tense, and I honestly couldn't put it down. I do kind of wonder though, like, if it needed to be in verse. I don't know if that's a controversial thing to say.
I guess if that's like her style, then it could only, do you know what I mean? Like, if that's the only way
she
wants to write.
When is a poem a poem, and when does it just have enjambment? Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, we know that I don't know the difference. I made it very clear on the poetry episode that I personally do not know what the definition of poetry is, and I do not know whether, yeah, I don't know.
I think that's like asking what the definition of art is, though. Like, that's a whole, you could do a whole fucking PhD discussing that. And I guess, like, in a way, it is kind of pointless to discuss whether or not this book needed to be verse. But I guess I just wonder, if you deleted all the line breaks and had vignettes, I feel like it would have the same effect.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess, why not? Why not have, why have vignettes when you can have poems? I don't know. But yeah, so I don't know. I think there's something there about the form. It's worth chewing over and thinking about. It's not, again, like, it's not necessarily something I would rush to go out of my way to read, but I feel like it has been a bit of a year of verse, novels in verse. Like, isn't, there was The Black Flamingo this year as well by Dean Atta, which
that was
very
year.
Beloved.
That was
it last year?
Yeah, it came out the same day No Big Deal came out, so I know for sure that it was last year. Because I remember seeing it on the same tables as No Big Deal and being like, yes, but both pink.
Both pink. And it does look, it looks really interesting.
Yeah.
I would definitely be interested in reading that. But yeah, I don't know. I guess it's something that when I've come across books that are like poemy, which is one of my husband's favorite words, and it's not quite the same as something that's lyrical.
Yeah,
because lyrical, I think, is like textural to the language of the book, but something that's poemy is just like feels poem-like. And obviously, Max Porter's "Grief Is the Thing with Feathers," I feel like, sits in that camp.
Yes,
and I'm
true.
A big fan of that. Fucking
true,
love
true,
that.
True.
But then I think also, is that just prose poetry?
Yeah, don't ask me, but good question.
Anyway, so yeah, I really recommend it. It also, Here is the Beehive really reminded me of like a cross between The Fire Sermon
by Jamie,
do you remember that?
Quattro.
Jamie Quattro, The Fire Sermon. It kind of reminds me of that, like in that kind of obsessive, lusty kind of losing your mind in the kind of rocky terrain of an affair. But then also it has so much kind of sadness and melancholy in it, which obviously The Fire Sermon lacks.
I'm interested. I would read this book.
I think you would like it. I did think of you as I was reading it.
Oh, thank you.
I just felt like very pod, a pod-like book. I guess the only other thing, and again, I feel like this is probably a slightly dumb thing to say, but I think it's a reasonable point. I'm not sure that I would rush to buy a hardback that took me 2 hours to
read.
Yeah,
do you know what? When you said it took you that long to read, I was like, I am not paying hardback money for that.
Like, I do think, I know that obviously the cost of a book is not a reflection of the time you spend with it. Like, it reflects the work that went into it. But also, I think ultimately a product is only worth what it's worth.
Yeah, and like, as a purchaser of a product, I have to perceive some value. So I personally would not perceive the value of that book to be good for me in hardback. I would prefer to buy that in paperback.
Yeah, and I think that's reasonable.
Me too.
Particularly as I think, if I recall, I think it's actually quite a chunky hardback.
Yeah, it looks not small, but it clearly is small of words.
I feel like I often replace my hardbacks eventually with paperbacks in one way or another. Because I don't like to reread them. I don't like to carry them around. I tend to only have a hardback because I'm thirsty and I can't wait. Whereas, yeah, the hardback novella, that's the sweet spot for me.
True.
What have you been reading?
So I read a forthcoming YA novel from Macmillan, who have published my two novels. So I get sent, you know, other books by them, but that they are soon to publish that they think I would enjoy, which is very nice of them. So the one that I read this week was called Love is for Losers by Vibeke Bruggeman, and it's coming out. It was meant to come out this spring, but they decided to postpone it because of the Rona. And it's now coming out in January. And it is great. It's about a very cynical teen girl who is living with her mum's best friend while her mum is off saving the world. And just about her kind of teen life. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. That was another one that I read very quickly. So I look forward to achieving great success when it's published.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds like my kind of bag. I definitely don't read as much YA as I used to when I was a bookseller.
Yeah.
Because I feel just a little bit less connected to what I personally am going to enjoy. But yes. I trust your taste.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I was happy to read it, happy to blurb it, happy to do an event with the author when it comes out next year. So, yep, that has my seal of approval. And then in my ear holes, so you know, last week I was listening to the Marisha Pessel book. After loving the audiobook of Night Film, I then went on to listen to the audiobook of Special Topics in Calamity Physics. I have basically done the same thing again with a different author. So a few weeks ago, I listened to the audiobook of Hilary Mantel's Beyond Black, and that is truly top three favourite audiobooks I've ever listened to. Straight in. So you know how whenever someone wants an audiobook recommendation, I always recommend Crimson Petal and the White?
Yes, you do.
I feel like I can now happily add Beyond Black by Hilary Mantel to that recommendation. So I loved it so much. I loved the book. I loved the audio performance. And then I listened to, it's called A Change of Climate, another Hilary Mantel book on audio. And it was good. It was basically the same vibe that I had between Night Film and the other Marisha Pessel book, where the first one I listened to, I loved. And then I was kind of chasing the same high with the next book and did not receive it. So A Change of Climate is very good. It contains something very, very gnarly. And apart from that, I just quite liked it.
That's the thing, isn't it? I feel like after reading something amazing, I always want to just go straight into like another five star, grips me by the balls, cannot put it down, banger. But you can't know. You just never know.
And the vibe is so different. Like, the story of Beyond Black is so different to the story of A Change of Climate. Like, they're just so different. And there's no reason why I would get from the second one what I got from the first one. But I still enjoyed it. It was no Beyond Black. So yeah, if anyone has an Audible credit rattling around in their account and they have not read Beyond Black by Hilary Mantel, may I recommend it? And it also has fascinating fat representation. I'd love to hear what y'all think of it.
Ooh, maybe I'll read it.
Maybe you will.
Maybe audio, but I'm still, my weekly update, I'm still plodding solemnly through the Southern Book Club's Guide to Vampire Slaying.
Yes.
We have 8.5 hours to go. Trucking along.
That's quite a lot to go.
Yeah, I'm just such a slow, it's really strange being a very fast reader, but a very slow audio booker. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you'll get there.
No, yeah, I mean, I probably won't though, because it's just, you can't listen quicker. I mean, I suppose you can turn up the speed, but I don't live that life. But like, this is just how I do. This is just
You'll finish it one day. No rush.
But it's just a very different reading experience, reading very slowly.
What's our little topic that we're going to goss about today?
The Waterstones Book of the Year. So I thought it'd just be fun to give our hot takes on what we think of each book, who we think might win. We can have a friendly competition.
It will be interesting for me to learn what is happening in the Waterstones Book of the Year through this chat.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just like summarize the prize for you. So the Waterstones Book of the Year in its current form has existed since 2012. The idea of it is that it's voted in by booksellers. So somewhere around like October time, booksellers are invited to submit their favorite book of the year. One bookseller, one book. That is then made into a shortlist. So there isn't really a long list. That's the shortlist. And then from the shortlist, James Daunt, the managing director of the company, and I presume the board, it just says like a panel of judges, they choose the winner. And then that is the book of the year. Throughout December, every bookshop will be celebrating that book, recommending it to customers, just trying to kind of push it as much as possible as like a book that kind of summarizes a great year of bookselling. So Kate Skipper, the Waterstones chief executive, has said that in normal years, our book of the year is a celebration and reflection of the year's publishing. But after such an unusual 2020 in which books have provided solace and inspiration to so many people, I'm thrilled by the extraordinary selection of titles our booksellers have picked for this year's shortlist. The stories behind the year weave through this list, bound together by the excitement of our booksellers. These are the books our booksellers want to see in the hands of more readers. As the nights draw in, the pleasures of reading a good book will help sustain many of us through the coming months. A really beautiful statement. The only thing is, I'm a Waterstones Book Prize truther.
Oh my God.
And I do not believe that James Daunt and the board don't press their thumb on the scale a little bit when tallying up the votes.
Yeah. Okay. I can believe that. Yeah. That sounds like a trutherism that I can believe.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked in a lot of bookshops. So I'm no longer a bookseller, obviously. I left bookselling in 2017. But I was a Waterstones bookseller. I've worked in, I think, around 20 shops, whether it was for a few days just helping with the visual merchandising or a few years and everything in between. And every single year, we'd get the shortlist and there would be at least one or two books that no one in the store had heard of. Usually nonfiction, usually a little bit leaning towards economics or politics. I don't know. I just don't think the booksellers were voting for those books. And that's fine.
So what would be the angle for the thumb on the scale? Would it be like there was some commercial advantage to something? Yeah.
So essentially every single shop in the country will have a display with the shortlist on it. And that display works essentially as shorthand for a gift guide.
Mm.
So every single customer who comes into the shop in December is probably going to be looking for gifts. So you have basically, if you have a nice diverse table with like a bit of fiction, bit of nonfiction, something suitable for kids, something that your nan will like, something that your secret Santa at work will like. The idea is you could kind of buy something for everyone on your list from that table.
Which just happens to have been voted for, allegedly, by the Waterstone staff.
Exactly.
Mm.
Exactly. And, I think it's fine. Like, it doesn't really matter. But I'm very curious to know if I'm alone in that or if other booksellers feel the same way.
Booksellers of the listenership of What Page Are You On? Slide into our DMs.
LMK, let me know. Let me know if your shop was absolutely wild about... let's find a good example. Was your shop wild about The Colour of Time by Dan Jones, in 2018? Were booksellers loving it? Were booksellers voting for it as their best book of the year?
Yeah, that like, definitely sounds like a thumb on the scale kind of title.
Undoubtedly, by the way, every single book on these shortlists are brilliant. I'm not debating that. I just question whether or not that they're being selected as people's favourite booksellers' favourite books that they've sold all year.
Yeah, you're like debating the mechanics of the prize rather than the goodness of the quality of the finalists.
Exactly. Anyway, so this year, it's the longest list we've ever had with 12 books. Last year we had 11, but usually it's more like 8. So yeah, it's definitely creeping a little bit longer. Last year's winner was The Boy, the Mole, The Fox and the Horse by Charlie Mack.
The book that I want to give a wedgie to. I hate this book so much. I've never read it and I hate it. Like, I literally want to flush its head down the toilet. I don't know, Alice. I don't know. Because every... It's just twee nonsense. Like, every page, I'm like, does this book have any plot? Or is it just, like, Winnie the Pooh-level truisms about, like, it's nice to be nice to people, it's okay not to be okay, sometimes we have to be very brave. Like, everything I see from this book, like, I just, yeah, I hate it. I have this visceral hatred of it. I'm like, this is nonsense. I haven't read it. I'm just very prejudiced against it.
It's very like Matt Haig meets Winnie the Pooh.
That's like my worst nightmare. Oh my God, that's literally what it is. And that is literally why I want to cyberbully the book, because it is Matt Haig meets Winnie the Pooh. If Matt Haig wrote Winnie the Pooh, you would have this nonsense Waterstones Book of the Year book that I hate for reasons that I don't fully understand. And yet I cling to them.
And yet, here's a wild thing. When it won Waterstones Book of the Year, it gained 400% increase in sales.
Yeah, of course it bloody did.
That's wild now, though, like 400% increase.
Yeah.
But like, that shows like that it's not just Waterstones, you know, awarding a book a little, you know, just like a little a Blue Peter badge. Like, it makes a demonstrable difference to the book's sales over Christmas. Yeah. And, you know, that year in 2019, that won over Queenie, which I think was a book that massively affected the landscape of 2019.
Yeah.
Lanny, which was my favorite book of the year, one of my favorite books of the year. No One Is Too Small to Make a Difference by Greta Thunberg.
Yeah.
Interestingly, also one of the ones I hadn't heard of that year was The House Without Windows. And that was like a discovered picture book, or it was a discovered story written by a 12-year-old in the 30s.
Oh, interesting. It was
illustrated and released last year. But like, that's a great example of a book that I just don't quite believe that booksellers voted for that.
Yeah, it's just like a nice one to put in the children's category.
But it does, yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't mean it doesn't deserve to be there. Anyway, so this year, we're going to go through them in the order that they appear on the website, because I don't feel like that order is a coincidence. It's not in alphabetical order, so I think it's in like a order of commerciality, maybe. I don't know. If that sounds good to you, my pal.
Yeah, however you want to do this, you are the expert, you are the investigative journalist, you are the insider.
I like investigative journalist
you
is
are.
My the tinfoil hat wearing Waterstones prize truther.
Yeah, but you were also the bookshop.org truther last week, so you're basically yeah, you are the investigative journalist.
Bookshop conspiracy theories, yeah. Is my life. Okay, so number one on the list is also the one that I personally, if I was going to the bookies, this is what I'd put my money on, and I will tell you for why when we get to the end of the list. But the first is The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett.
I love that book.
You've read it.
I've yet to read it.
I have the hardback right in front of me as we speak.
There's no way you won't like it. I just think it's great. I think that, yeah, if I had to choose a winner of all of the books of the year that I feel blend quality, universal appeal, kind of intelligent, I would definitely go for The Vanishing Half. I love it.
And also, I feel like it ticks some other boxes for me as well. Like, I think after last year with a children's book, it's more likely to be an adult book this year.
Yeah.
We tend not to see kids' books appear multiple times. In fact, let me just have a quick look. In fact, we tend to alternate. I'm just going to very quickly. 2012, it was Polpo, the cookbook. 2013, it was Stoner by John Williams. 2014, The Miniaturist. 2015, The Fox and the Star by Coralie Bickford-Smith, which is a children's hardback picture book. So 2016 was The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. So nodding back to 2014's historical fiction of The Miniaturist.
Yes.
Then the 2017 book was La Belle Sauvage by Philip Pullman, which was a bit of a wild card, because one thing about the Book of the Year is it's always something that Waterstones as a brand can really feel like they own.
Yes.
So it's always a book that they feel like they can really push from good to great, you know?
Yeah.
And I also have a tinfoil hat theory about why La Belle Sauvage was chosen. In 2017, I had my money on Lincoln in the Bardo,
yes,
by George Saunders to win. It was on the shortlist. The thing is, from the shortlist being announced to the actual winner being announced, the Booker Prize was announced, and Lincoln in the Bardo won the Booker. So suddenly, yes, Waterstones, although they had a exclusive edition, which is another thing I think plays a part into which books are chosen, they could no longer really take ownership of the sales that the book would garner. So
yes.
I think there was a last minute pivot to La Belle Sauvage. And then 2018, it was Normal People. So we had a kids book in 2017, then we're back to an adult fiction with Normal People. And then 2019 was The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse. So 2020, I think it's going to be an adult fiction.
Which
or possibly nonfiction, but
could well be The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett.
Mm-hmm. So then the next one on the list is Love in Colour by Bolu Babalola.
Yep.
Which I believe we both have copies of, we both dipped into.
Yeah, I've read most of it. I don't think I've finished it, but yep, that's a good choice.
So short story collection, it's the first time a short story collection has been on the shortlist, which I find very exciting.
Yeah, that's
wild. It's a retelling. Yeah, so it's a collection of retellings of folk stories and fairy tales from around the world that feature love.
Real, you know, it's got like a story about her parents as well, so it's not all kind of like historical or folk tales. It's quite varied.
So I think that could be a really nice choice, but the reason why I don't think that will win is because I think Foils will pick that as their book of the year.
Interesting.
I feel like Foils really owned it. The Foils displays were all over Twitter, so that would be my personal, that would be my money would be on Foils going for Love in Colour. And Waterstones and Foils obviously will not pick the same book now more so than ever, because they are part of the same. They're owned by the same hedge fund company. So it wouldn't make commercial sense for them both to pick the same one.
True.
Okay. Next on the list is 1, 2, 3, 4, The Beatles in Time by Craig Brown.
Yep. That's a book.
Okay.
That's a book.
Yeah, that's a book. That's like the book, a book that you buy for your dad. Yep.
That's literally what
you know,
it is.
It's a daddy book. No disrespect to the female Beatles fans, but you know what I'm saying. I personally love the Beatles.
I have no... my dad is very prejudiced against the Beatles, having been at university in Liverpool in, a post-Beatles era. So I was raised in a non-Beatles household, so I would not buy this for my dad, and I don't really have any opinion on the Beatles.
Fair. We'll move on. Exciting Times by Neisha Dolan.
Yep. Very popular with our demographic.
Yeah, I feel like it was a bit of a book of the summer.
Yeah.
Again, I think that, if I remember correctly, is also... No, that's not an exclusive edition. It might be an exclusive edition. I can't remember. But yeah, fair play. Island Dreams by Gavin Francis.
I don't know.
Non-fiction.
That.
Non-fiction, travel writing.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, I think I'm very biased. There is two non-fiction books on this list that I think would be more likely to win than this one. So we'll see. One of those is Ex Libris by Michiko Kokutani.
I don't know this. I don't know any of these books. What's going on?
This is what I'm saying. So Ex Libris is beautiful. It's a hardback. The author, Michiko Kokutani, is a New York Times book reviewer. I believe it was the New York Times. Apologies if I've got the wrong publication. I'm not particularly
a big deal
literary criticism. But yeah, a big deal book critic. And this is like a collection of 100 books that to be reread, I think it's called. And like, I guess this is the nature of these books when it comes from an individual rather than a kind of a panel. Some of the choices are a bit wild, yeah, in my opinion. The book is stunning, but like there's a whole section on Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
Like four or five books about Muhammad Ali. Okay. I mean, I find that's a little bit offbeat for me, but okay. So although the book itself is a beautiful objet.
Objet.
It's not... Objet. It's not necessarily one that I'd be like, oh, fun project, let's read our way through Ex Libris. Like, there's a lot of stuff in there that I'm just never going to read.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm not a New York book critic, I guess. One of many reasons.
No, it's the only reason.
That's the only thing holding me back. But as I said, it is gorgeous. I think it'd be a really beautiful Christmas present for someone who's very bookish in your life. So for that reason, maybe I could see that winning, but I think it's just a bit too gift booky.
Mm.
But then I suppose the boy, the mole, the fox, and the horse is very gift booky.
I'm just so impressed that you can remember that book's title, because I will literally never remember it.
I cannot remember that book's title. I have the list in front of me. None of this is off the top of my head. It is all written down. So the next on the list is another nonfiction, and this is Diary of a Young Naturalist by Dara McAnulty.
Yes, yes, yes. I keep hearing about this. It's not my vibe, but I, if I had like a young person to buy a book for, I would definitely consider buying that. Isn't he like 16? Like he's super young.
He's 16. He's an autistic writer. And it looks really beautiful. Yeah, I think it looks like a really nice book. It did win a big prize this year, which the name of which escapes me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's published by like a really tiny publisher as well, isn't it? So that's like really nice.
But that's the thing, because it won a big prize, that's a reason why I'm not sure it'll be the book of the year.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I keep saying that obviously lots of these books won prizes, but I think generally maybe not necessarily before the Book of the Year was announced. Anyway, the next on the list is Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell. Have you read that one?
I haven't, but I have it on my Kindle, so I will read it at some point. I'm interested to read it. I'm not so interested to read it that I've already read it, even though it's been sitting on my Kindle for months. But I'm vaguely interested.
I'm probably not going to read this book.
Yeah, you know, it's not very
I'm at
vibe.
Peace with that. It's History Times. It's Shakespeare's son. Yeah, it's not my vibe. I'm at peace with that. Next is Black and British by David Olusoga.
Yes, I've seen a lot about this. I do not have it, but that would be a good choice, wouldn't it?
If it's a nonfiction, I hope it's that. I think it'd be a great choice.
Yes. Okay, maybe this one. Maybe this is going to be the winner.
We have three more books I don't really have anything to say about, so I'm just going to go through them really quickly because I know you won't either. The Book of Hopes by Catherine Rundell. That is a collection of writing by children's authors, which is offering like hope for the future.
Yes.
Very The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse vibes, but maybe a bit less
wedgie.
Matt Haig.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more like, you know, I don't know, whatever. The Rat Line by Philippe Sands. That is History Times. Not interested.
No, me either.
And then a book called Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright, an animal poem for every day of the year, illustrated by Britta Teckentrup and Fiona Waters, I think, is the writer or the editor. I don't
Sounds
know,
nice,
just a nice big, yeah, nice big gift book of poetry for kids, whatever. Nice, but it's not going to change my world. Yeah, so that's the whole list. I'm always very excited to see who the winner will be. But I think something really important to note is that this prize is 2012, and every single year, with no exception, the winning author has been a white author.
Yes.
So I think, you know... The shortlists are traditionally lean, very white, which I guess isn't necessarily a big surprise. But I think that in a year in which lots of companies are stepping up to kind of mark change, it would be a great year to see a black author win.
I would be shocked if they didn't, just based on the quality of the books by black authors in that list.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's like the books of that quality have always been there.
Did they often make it onto the list? Like that's
well, I guess that's what I'm saying. Like 2019, we have Queenie.
Yeah,
but like, let me see if that I think is the first book by a black author to ever be shortlisted.
That's so wild. That is so bad and so wild.
So I'm scanning. I have them all written down from 2012. I'm scanning it really quickly. So if I'm missing one, please accept my humble apologies and let me know what I've missed. But I believe all of these authors, well, none of these authors are black. there are other authors of colour on the list, like Kanya Yanagihara in 2015.
Yeah. Well.
So, yeah, it's obviously about time. And why not this year? And why not one of those three incredible books by Black British writers?
Britt Bennett's American. British?
Apologies.
But that she'd still be my pick to win.
It would still, yeah. I won't hold that against her.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's an exciting time. Are there any from the list that you will read or feel inspired to read because they're on the list? Does the list affect you in that way?
It's kind of reminded me that I would like to read Black and British by David Olusoga. So maybe I will pick that up.
Me too.
But yeah, you've got to read The Vanishing Half. It bangs.
So that's the thing. I feel like before the year is out, I want to read The Vanishing Half along with quite a few other books that I picked up during lockdown that I hoped would help like shake me from my tree of despair, but which I just did not bother to pick up at all.
Yeah.
But now that I feel like I've got my mojo back, I just want to catch up and make sure that I've read all of the amazing titles that I picked up in a moment of optimism and then was just too lazy to tackle.
I hear you, my friend. I hear you. Well, I feel very well educated about the workings of the Waterstones Book of the Year concept. I feel very knowledgeable about this year's, and I hope that our friends at home do too.
This is probably more information than anyone ever wants about this particular prize. I will look forward to discussing other book prizes as well, though, in the future. This just happens to be a seasonally appropriate one.
Yes. And also, you know, you used to work there. You've got knowledge. You know things.
I have a vested interest.
You have a vested interest. And I got to talk about how much I'm irrationally infuriated by the rat book or whatever it's called, the mole book.
The boy, the mole, the fox and the horse.
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to buy it. I'm buying it for you for Christmas.
No. Well, you can find us on Instagram at WhatPagePod. You can find us on Twitter at WhatPagePod. Can't you?
Yes, that's it.
I'm not
at WhatPagePod.
And I look forward to talking to you again next week, Alice Slater.
I cannot wait, Bethany Rutter.
I wonder what we're going to talk about.
I don't know yet. If you have any hot goss or shit that you want us to discuss, just let us know.
Yeah, just slide into our DMs. Consider it. Any goss we want to know.
All right, catch you later.
Bye.